thank you. Rati, thank you very much for joining us. I know there have been a number of questions being raised on the current status of the UN support package to the communities impacted by the kidnapping of the girls. So we're delighted to have the head of the UNFPA office in Nigeria join us. You have the floor, make some opening remarks, and then we'll take some questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'd like to say the UN family in Nigeria has not forgotten the Chibok girls, even though it's long now. Even with the new challenges coming into Nigeria, like Ebola and other things, but we still remember the Chibok girls, and they're still working on it. And the UNFPA is providing a response within the framework of the integrated support package of the UN family as a whole. And I'll just concentrate on the response by UNFPA. For example, the provision of sexual reproductive health services through the provision of RH kits, which include delivery kits, taking into account that most of the clinics or health centers have closed down. So we need these kits for home deliveries and to use in the few health centers remaining. Also, there's been a lot of training for the use of these kits, provision of integrated support package of provision of reproductive health services in humanitarian settings. But of importance is also restoring dignity of the women and girls. For your own information, when you go to Borno State, especially around Chibok, most of the people you will see there are women and children. Most of the men have either been recruited or have just been taken away or have run away from the community. So we have to service the women and girls, restore their dignity by providing dignity kits to them. The issue of sexual gender-based violence is very critical. Some of the escaped girls who ran away, the Chibok girls, were actually raped on their way as they ran away from the insurgents. They met some lone men who then raped them and dumped them. So double tragedy, and it has been really a sad story for that. But these girls have been screened. They didn't have major health issues besides the rape cases that I've talked about. And so it was important to undergo what we call to provide support in psychosocial services. And UNFPA has worked together with other agencies like IOM, UNICEF, WHO, and other NGOs like PATH2, supported by USAID, to provide psychosocial services so that we provide resilience both at individual level and also for communities to have that resilience to cope with a very difficult situation. And I would like to say some of the people who were trained to provide psychosocial services continue to run away from the community or from the district or from the area. So the training continues. Has to continue because we now have a challenge of a big IDP camp in Maiduguri, which is the capital of Borno State. And I understand there are thousands. I can't give an exact figure there right now, but there are thousands of people in this camp, and they need support. They need a lot of psychosocial support and other needs. A challenge we are facing in terms of the displaced people is that some of them do not like to go into the camps because it's risky for them. Because the insurgents have a preference for large groups. So people don't want to congregate. So they'd rather go and live with host communities, which also puts pressure on some families. UNFPA supported data gathering. There was a very long exercise of mapping the girls, the Chibok girls, mapping their families and their communities, so that then the psychosocial support can be targeted. So that data gathering was very useful, and is the results of the data gathering exercise has proved very useful now as people come in, different agencies come in to provide support. And I think one area which is very, very critical is supporting coordination efforts at Borno State level around Chibok, because a lot of agencies and organizations are trying to help. They want to help. So there is a lot of pressure. So UNFPA provided support in the development of a 4Ws matrix, who is doing what, where, and when, so that it can be well coordinated and meetings are held where synergies around interventions within the communities are also done. And finally, there's what we call the healthy timing and spacing of pregnancies. This is being mainstreamed into our humanitarian response. And the message to the women and girls, including those who escaped, is that it's not the best time to be pregnant, when you can hardly sleep in your house, when there are no clinics, when you are running all the time. So it's like mainstreaming family planning services at a time when it's not the best timing to have babies. And of course, we are promoting girl-child education through different partners, because the issue of girl-child education is, I think, education continues to be the most important factor. Once we address this, we will have addressed even the broader picture challenge, which is the insurgents. Because when we have a lot of young people who are not educated, who are not going to school, not gainfully employed, you get a lot of them getting into, you know, undesirable behaviors. So I would say these are just a few things that I thought I could just share with you, and I'll be ready to respond
Great.
To questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Matthew. Go ahead, Sima.
Hi, my name is Shauna McGee from Kyoto News, and on behalf of the United Nations Correspondents Association, thank you so much for providing this briefing. I know we're all interested in hearing more about this very critical issue. You mentioned the dignity kits. Could you tell us a little bit more what's involved in the dignity kits, and could you touch upon psychological counseling, how you are helping these girls? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The dignity kits, we all know women have needs, specific needs, that they cannot run away from. They go into a camp, they're running from home, they have no menstruation pads, they have nothing to use. They have a lot of needs which are specific to them. And they need water, they need everything that will keep a woman dignified, clean, and feeling good. So there are a lot of other things. I've just given an example, because those are some of the things that we put there. And then in terms of psychosocial support, we have worked in collaboration with the University of Maiduguri, where we have expert psychologists and, experts at the university who have been the trainers of trainers. So they have been training health workers to be psychosocial officers. So these are the people we work with, because, you know, it's quite inaccessible in Borno State. So we work with institutions that are already in Borno State. And University of Maiduguri has been very, very instrumental in providing the expertise and skills in psychosocial support.
Matthew. Matthew Lee, Intercity Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access. Thanks for the briefing. I wanted to, you'd say, you know, UNFPA's role seems, it seems like you're trying to help while these girls are still missing. But I wanted to know, since you're there, what update can you give on, it seems to many people that a lot of the focus on getting the girls returned, or at least the sort of social media global interest in it, seems to have waned or been replaced by other things. And what is the status of the search for the girls? There's some talk of the UK sending reconnaissance planes, some talk of Nigerian soldiers rebelling or mutinying for not having the right equipment to fight it. What's your sense of the status of actually returning these more than 200 girls to their families?
What I can say is that the government is working on it, and that's something that the government has taken up and is doing a lot to do that. As for the UN, as a family, we are supporting girls who have retained, and also pre-positioning and getting ready for the girls when they come out. Also helping the communities to be ready to receive the children and not let them go out of community before they get psychosocial support and so on. So this is the role of the UN. The other part is for the government to take a lead.
And is Mr. Jinnett still the envoy on this, or is there a new? Has someone new been appointed? This may be for Stefan. I'm not sure. I'm just wondering.
Well, I think there will be a replacement if there hasn't one already named for the head of the West Africa office. So,
okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Go ahead and then go ahead. You choose. You guys decide amongst yourselves.
Negotiate.
Alexandra Olson from AP. I was wondering if you said that you were helping the families and the communities get ready for the families to return. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the issues that you're encountering there. You know, Are you concerned that they'll be stigmatized, that they won't be welcomed back by their own families or their communities? What have you found that is the attitude in their community? And the other thing that I was wanted to ask is if you could elaborate a little bit on, you were saying that some of the people that you train, that you've trained to be psychosocial workers, then flee because of the violence, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, you know, how many and what's the shortage and that kind of thing. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In terms of the attitude of the community, it's not only the attitude of the community, also of the girls, especially those who returned. Initially, they didn't want to hear anything about school or going back to school because they were at school when this happened. But because of a psychosocial counseling clinic that had to be done in a Bauchi state, a neighboring state, they went through a rigorous clinic, psychosocial clinic. By the end of that week, USAID was also supporting it. By the end of that clinic, all of them, they want to go back to school. So that's the kind of support we can provide. And the fact that now they've changed their mind in terms of not wanting to hear anything, they were traumatized, scared of school, now they are ready to go to school. And that was a major, major breakthrough. Same with communities. There is counseling, group counseling with communities, community leaders, and the counseling is trying to help them to receive the girls when they come back and not to stigmatize them. So the whole community is ready to receive. The girls are also helped to be able to want to go back to school. So that's what I would say. And then you also talked about the second question was on
the social workers who flee.
Or the, yeah. Yes. It's natural because the environment there is very, very tough. So even if somebody can be trained and wants to do something, but because of the situation, they run away. They go to other states. But that does not mean to say we should stop continuing to train people. And the good thing about it is that we are not only supporting Chibok, we are supporting neighboring states also. Adamawa is another state which has serious problems. Yobe, for example. So when they go to these other neighboring states, they still have the skill to continue to support communities, and we continue to work with them in whatever state they go to. There will always be a need for that skill. So it's not a wasted skill, no.
Please. Thank you for this briefing. My name is Sarah Somerset. I want to thank you for providing feminine hygiene supplies and the dignity kits. That's very important. And I'm also grateful that the girls have been screened. I wanted to ask if the healthcare screenings included long-term plans to monitor them for late developing STDs as a result of the rapes they might have been subjected to.
Yes. Yes. The screening was done on a variety of health conditions. I cannot give you the specifics of the actual health conditions that we screened against at the moment. I can share with you once I get to my computer.
Not specifically what they were screened for, but just that they're going to be screened again later on.
Oh, yes, they are. Because, like I told you, we are now working with this, like, healthy timing and spacing of pregnancy. It's only one aspect. There are many more things. They are being groomed. It's almost like creating safe space around these girls and making sure that as they go forward, even in a development mode, they will have mastered certain skills, certain knowledge and attitudes that will make them survive in life. So that will be addressed in the long term. In fact, the UN Family Integrated Support Package has the immediate and then the medium and the long term. So all that is well covered in the package.
What NGOs are specifically on the ground right now in Chibok?
Pardon?
What NGOs are on the ground?
Oh, yeah. We are working with local NGOs. But for UNFPA, we had to engage Red Cross for logistics. So because they are already working in there, so we engaged them to distribute the reproductive health kits, the dignity kits, and any other distribution that we need to be done. We also have a local NGO called M1. Midwives Women Association. So that organization is very local, indigenous, and has been very, very strong in terms of providing support in the community. So everybody is coming to them. So they are needing also support to strengthen them because of the pressure of work that needs to be done.
Thank you. Dulcie?
Yeah, hi. I'm just a little confused about the story of the rapes. So how many girls escaped and how many were subjected to rapes? And you said local people did them. If you could just elaborate on that. And then your discussion about the pregnancy, I'm just a little confused about what you meant about spacing the pregnancy. Are these girls pregnant as a result of the rapes? If you could just clarify a little bit. Thanks.
Okay. Now, just to start with the last question, the issue of pregnancy is like, it's like mainstreaming family planning into the humanitarian response, to make it easy. But when we are in the north of Nigeria, we talk of healthy timing and spacing of pregnancies. That's the language that is acceptable there. So, in other words, we are mainstreaming some of these things, and you educate them that when you, for you to fall pregnant, you have to, it is well-timed. And is this the right time when we are not sure of where we are going to sleep tonight, when we don't have clinics, when health workers are running away? So that's to answer that second question. And then the other question was...
about you'd mentioned girls being raped, have to escape.
Yes, you see, what happens is we have a group of stakeholders which is co-chaired by the Federal Minister of Health and UNFPA. Of all stakeholders who support Chibok, Borno State in general, all right? In these meetings, we get people from Borno State, from my degree, they come to share first-hand information of what is going on. So we get real stories of what happened to some of these girls. So one of the stories is one I've just shared with you, that one of the girls, on her way, escaping from the insurgents, coming home, running in the bush, met some lone men and was raped. So I'm saying the issue of sexual violence is very serious, both by the insurgents and also by other men who take advantage of a situation which is just so, you know, challenging. So it's more and more of this sexual violence going on. So that's all I was saying.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Interpol has offered assistance in recovering the Chibok girls to the Nigerian government, which the president has declined. Is there any way to find out why, perhaps?
I think that's a question best asked of the Nigerian government, because Interpol is not a UN UN agency. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Oh, one last question.
I may have missed something, but could you tell us a little bit about how you're working with men and boys in the communities to help raise awareness about the situation of these girls? And you had talked about changing the girls' minds about going to school. Could you tell us how long you did you provided services and how it was that you changed their minds to go back to school? Thank you.
Okay. How are we ensuring that the men and boys, when I talked about community, psychosocial training and so on, I just lumped everything together. But they were actually divided into groups. First were the traditional and religious leaders. They had their session where they were trained on how they were going to work with their communities, like responsibility by a traditional leader or religious leader, what they are going to do with their own communities. Then we had men and boys. Another session, a whole training session just for men and boys on what they can do, what is their responsibility to ensure that girls are not abused, and that when they come back, they are accepted, and what are they going to do? So all this, so they are very much part of the response package, the men and boys. And when you come to the education also, we have what we call the safe space for the girl child. That's the program I referred to. We have the men and the boys. We have a group of men who are like the champions. We call them champions. They are the champions who are fighting for the rights of the girl child in terms of education, in terms of sexual reproductive health rights. So we have these groups of men, and they are now talking to other men, they are. It's like male involvement program. While we work with the girls, we also work with the men and the boys to support the girls' initiative. But the, for the boys, it's even more interesting because they'll grow up with a different understanding of how to treat women and girls. So we are hoping to get a generation in front, in future, of young men who have been trained at a tender age, who grow up with an appreciation of the rights of women and girls.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.